5432. Good morning. This is Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and today on our program we have Dr. Bob Bartos, Dean of College of Education and Human Services and the Graduate Dean at Shippensburg University. Did I get that correctly, Bob?
That's correct.
Bob, what is human services? What does that involve?
Well, basically the human services involves all of those areas such as education, social work, criminal justice, counseling, those types of areas that are helping services or educational services for other individuals.
Now, Bob, can you give us a little bit of information about Shippensburg University? What kind of a university is it? What does it offer?
Well, Shippensburg University is located in South Central Pennsylvania in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. It is a part of the state system of higher education, one of 14 universities in that system. We have about 5,500 undergraduates and about 1,000 graduate students. And we have a plethora of courses and programs like any other university. But our big programs in terms of undergraduate training are in the area of teacher education and in criminal justice and in social work. And we service an area that is around 50 to 75 miles in radius, which goes into Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, down to the Maryland border. We are a full-service type of institution, so to speak, and we do have a very strong liberal arts program, as well as a number of graduate programs that service the region. So, in a nutshell, that's basically what we are.
Now, I saw down at Shippensburg that you are building, a new school there, a new addition, or what's happening?
Well, we've been doing a lot of building. It looks like we're digging for gold down here. We've completed in the last 3 years a new school of business building. We have added on an additional addition to the another building, which is now the math and computer science. And right now we are in the bidding stages for the building of a brand new laboratory school or model school that will be here on campus, and also the renovation of a building to place all of these human services programs in as well.
Now, this lab school is intriguing to me. Can you tell us, this is not just your ordinary lab school, can you tell us a little bit about it? You know my bent on this.
Well, we have a very interesting lab. We have a lab school on campus now that's nursery through sixth grade. And it's a very unique kind of situation in the fact that it is a public school as well. We share responsibilities for the children and the instruction in this laboratory school with the Shippensburg Area School District. And our professors teach in the nursery school, kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. We have public school teachers teaching in the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. The university controls the curriculum in terms of what happens, because one of the uniquenesses of the lab school is the whole idea that we are able to be a model school and to use a number of different types of pedagogical processes in testing new ways to teach young children. This uniqueness of the lab school brings about a real interesting concept in the fact that it is kind of a neighborhood school. And it allows us the opportunity to have a real diversity of students from the neighborhood. Sometimes people think of lab schools as simply being the kids of faculty and staff on campus, but this is truly a neighborhood school and allows us an opportunity to do all kinds of interesting things. And with a brand new school integrated with a lot of technology and opportunities, we are very excited about all the different types of things we may be able to do. One of the things we're going to be able to do is kind of interesting in the fact that each one of the rooms will be interactive in terms of technology and television, and we will be able to tap in from our regular college classrooms and view what is happening in any lab school classroom at any time and have interaction with the teacher as to why he or she was doing certain things with the kids. So, it's very exciting.
One of the things that I'm interested in is the actual physical construction of the school, which is environmentally sustainable, isn't that correct?
Yeah, this will be the first green building, so to speak, elementary school that's being built in the state. There was a government building, and I don't know exactly which one was completed recently. And it's a fascinating process to watch how the architect and the contractor work together in terms of the different types of materials and the different ways in which the building is set with windows and everything to maximize sunlight, to maximize ventilation, things of that sort, and the type of material, the recyclable materials that are being used in the building. It's really quite fascinating, and in essence, if done well, is less expensive and probably more durable than other types of material which are used. And we've spent a lot of time in looking at materials and looking at ways that we can build this building that will be environmentally sound and fit into the environment in meaningful ways. And another thing about it is it's a great educational opportunity for our children in that school to understand even more so the whole concept of recycling and environmental processes that we are taking in the building. So it's not only an education for us, but it's going to be an education for the kids in the school and our teachers as well.
Now, what ever prompted you to do the first sustainable green school in the state?
Well, it was interesting. We contracted with this particular contractor called John Becker, and John and had just completed or worked on another building that was, quote, green, and thought that this might be something we might be interested in. And after looking into it and talking with some other individuals and viewing a number of other buildings that were like this, we thought it would be the right thing to do. And, of course, cost always comes into any building, especially when you're in a state system process and with public money. So our major concern was it going to cost more? And when we really looked at it and cost it out, it didn't cost any more. And I think what we will have is a much more viable and interesting building as a result of it. So that was the conceptualization was at a time when we began to talk with the architect about the design. And we're very excited about it. And we've had some additional grant monies to allow other individuals to come in and look at other aspects in terms of waste deposits, all of the types of things that we never thought of with reference to the building itself.
Well, now you are teaching your students not only in a normal classroom in terms of environmental issues, but you literally are teaching it as a way of life, and I commend you on that, because very few people who are building schools across the nation even have considered anything such as this. So I really want to commend you on that.
Well, thank you. No, it certainly was something I had not thought of until we got into it. And I would really encourage other people as they begin to look at building or even renovation of buildings, that we are renovating one of the buildings. We're even going to use recycling material in that building as well. So it is a very viable option and something that I think will certainly help in terms of the environment.
All right, let's get back to your institution of higher learning here.
Mm-hmm.
And you are a certified teacher education. You certify teachers in the state of Pennsylvania, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, there has been a lot of criticism I saw both in the newspaper and at the level of the governor,
mm-hmm.
with regard to the Sheehy schools, as they're called, the state teacher schools,
right.
in the state of Pennsylvania, having too many teachers and putting out too many teachers, etc., and yet nationwide there is a deficiency of teachers. I don't understand the discrepancy here. Can you explain that to me? I mean, nationwide, we are being told that 50% of teachers, principals, and superintendents are, in the next 5 years, about to retire, and we have the governor and the secretary of education in the state of Pennsylvania telling us we're educating too many teachers.
Well, it's kind of interesting. The if you'll look, probably in the next 10 years, the nation schools will need approximately 2.5 million new teachers, and to replace retiring teachers, to meet projected enrollment increases, things of that sort in certain states. If you look at the need for teachers, it's kind of a phenomenon that's a coast phenomenon. If you'll start with New York City and just go right down the coast, the eastern coast through Florida, and then across through Texas, and then through Arizona, and then up the Pacific coast, at least up and up to Washington, you will find that most of the coastal states, there is a real need for teachers. If you go into the central portions of the United States, such as in Kansas or Nebraska or Minnesota or places like that, there is still a surplus of teachers. And I think one of the reasons why, obviously, is that the population growth are seemingly on the coast more so. And secondly, many of the teachers that are coming out do not want to teach in urban settings for various reasons, most of which are not really right, but the picture is much worse than the reality of the situation. In Pennsylvania, it's been an interesting phenomenon. The state has picked up teacher education as something that they want to deal with, and they want to deal with rather vigorously. And some of the stuff that they've done has not, I do not have any problems with. They've looked at different standards. They have changed the standards for the way in which they want teachers taught and the things that they want teachers to be able to teach. And that's fine, because basically what they did was to use the national standards that are primarily out of NCATE, which is a National Council for the Accreditation of Teacher Education Programming, which we also are accredited by. And using those basic standards, I thought, was a very good idea, and I'm very pleased the state picked those up. They've also, in the last 2 or 3 years, finally got down to the point of passing what we call here in Pennsylvania Chapter 49, which is primarily the Bible as to what type of things we can certify teachers with, what type of certificates, what things that they have to do, and that type of thing. And so they brought that forward, and they have listened to some extent to the professional organizations dealing with training of teachers in the state. So I'm generally pleased with that. But there are some interesting phenomena. At the same time that they are doing this, it seems as though the, especially the Pennsylvania Department of Education, they are saying that we have way too many teachers in the state. And at the very same time that they're saying they're having way too many teachers, I talk with superintendents on a regular basis, and they have very difficult time finding substitutes for those teachers that are out sick or taking personal days. And it's been an extreme dilemma in this state, because there's not enough people around to substitute that have certificates. So there's a real dichotomy that seems to exist there. As far as what the state has done with teachers, they decided that they were going to raise the standards, which is perfectly legitimate. That's fine. We want to produce, and I think we are producing in the state for the most part, some of the best and finest teachers in the United States. I feel very strongly that within our state system that we are producing an extremely good product. I don't want to sound like a business, but we are producing a very good product that has become very successful in their teaching activities. And they are getting jobs, and the placement record is very, very good. But the state decided that they were going to raise the exit standards. The exit standards here are that they have to be recommended for certification by an institution. The institution normally sets a grade point average for them to graduate with. And then the state also requires them to take the Praxis test, which was called the National Teachers Exam at one time. And these Praxis tests are in general knowledge and in communication skills, and also pedagogical knowledge, and also knowledge in the discipline. And they have raised the cut scores, or the passing scores on those. For the most part, they are the highest cut scores in the United States, of those states that are using the Praxis as an exit, which obviously will reduce to some extent the number of teachers that we will certify based on those very high cut scores. Secondly, they have tried.
Isn't that elitist?
I think what it was, I don't know whether it's elitism or simply the fact that PDE, the Pennsylvania Department of Education, still perceives that we have a real surplus of teachers in this state, and this is a way to cut back on the number of teachers being certified. And as far as I can see, and in my own judgment and my own numbers, their numbers are wrong. Their perceptions are really wrong about the supply of teachers in this state, because every teacher that we are graduating from Shippensburg is getting a job. And I think that there's a lot of that going on throughout the state. Now, Pennsylvania is kind of an interesting state in a way, because it has 89 or 90 institutions, both public and private, that certify, that recommend people for certification, that do have teacher education programs. So we do produce an awful lot of teachers in the state collectively, but many of those teachers are near the borders of New York and Maryland and West Virginia and New Jersey and Virginia, and those states need teachers very badly. There is a perception that in the state that basically, and the governor has said this, and so has the Secretary of Education, that basically they don't want to train teachers and then have them go outside the state. They feel it's a waste of their monies. My viewpoint is, if somebody pays taxes in the state for 18 years, they should be able to go to a state system school, choose whatever area they want to get into, and as long as they know the competition, they should be able to graduate, and then they should be able to go any place they want to. Well, so as a result, they have changed some of the standards. They also have tried to change the standard for admission into teacher education programs to a point where students would have to have a 3.0 average just to get into teacher education programming, maintain a 3.0 average throughout their entire time at the university. And you know as well as I do, and anybody that's listening knows, that sometimes kids go to school and they have one bad semester. And if they have one bad semester, they'll never be able to catch up. And so I think it's just too much of an infringement at this particular time on what goes on with admission into teacher education. It's been a real dilemma, and teacher education programs have taken a lot of criticism by PDE and by the governor, and I think not duly warranted criticism by them. I think there's a lot of ignorance on the part of the politicians as to just exactly what happens when a teacher is trained in a good, solid, accredited teacher education program.
You're listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski, WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 AM, and today we're here with Dr. Bob Bartos, Dean of the College of Education and Human Services and Graduate Dean at Shippensburg University. And we're talking about teacher training programs and things that are happening at Shippensburg University. Now, Dr. Bartos, wow, you've said so much. It's incredible. I've been taking notes.
Sorry.
Feverishly, I've been taking notes. Now, let's go back for a couple of things.
Okay.
I just want you to remember that our audience is a general audience, and we educators tend to use terms that people don't understand. So I'm going to go back and explain a few. PDE is the Pennsylvania Department of Education.
That's correct, yes.
And NCAT is the National Council for Accreditation of Teachers.
Right. It is an organization that is the national accreditation organization, and they set national standards for which we are then judged, and if we are judged to meet those standards, we are then called an accredited institution based on those standards.
Now, are they the institution that now gives a national test? It's a voluntary test for you can become nationally certified?
There is a connection. It's not the same organization, but there is a connection between that organization and what is now known as a national board, in which an individual can, through a series of processes, become nationally certified, which
now
means that they have met or exceeded national standards as an individual teacher going through that process.
So a person who graduates from Shippensburg University as a teacher is only trained in education in the state of Pennsylvania, is that correct?
I didn't hear the last part of it,
I said that a teacher who graduates from Shippensburg University then is only trained to teach in the state of, certified to teach in the state of Pennsylvania, is that correct?
They are certified to teach in the state of Pennsylvania, but there's something which is called reciprocity. And what happens is that Pennsylvania's certification is also made eligible to teach in about 40 other states through a process called reciprocity. So if a person gets a certificate to teach in Pennsylvania, they may go to Maryland, they may go to Virginia, they may go to New York, they may go to any other state and apply for certification there. And those states will recognize Pennsylvania's certification. Now, and they will give them a temporary certificate for like 3 years. They may have to take a couple of courses that are, you know, indigenous to simply that state's process. But the certificate is recognized, and so therefore there is a decent reciprocity, and so you're not limited to the state of Pennsylvania once you get certified in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I thought, I'm glad you told me that. I thought I'm certified in the state of Virginia and Pennsylvania. I thought my Virginia certification was for 5 years. I have to go back and look at it.
You might want to check that.
You also spoke about Chapter 49. Can you tell people what that means?
Well, we have, these are the rules
What's
and regulations
chapter?
By which the legislature says that we will, in fact, give certificates, and what the eligibility of will be for each type of certificate, like a teaching certificate in mathematics, a supervisory certificate, a principal certificate, a superintendent certificate, a special ed teacher certificate. They said that that chapter, which is basically an act of the legislature, that sets up the conditions under which an individual will be certified.
Okay.
Okay.
So they can get all kinds of alternative certification and still be certified.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Boy, I didn't know there were 89 to 90 institutions of higher learning that give accreditation. I had no idea.
They do. I think it's 89, and there's a lot of. We have about 19 public institutions in the state, and the rest are private. But we have an enormous amount of private institutions in the state of Pennsylvania, and most of them do have a part of their programming is training of teachers.
Now, there has been a tremendous amount of ridicule nationally with regard to teachers giving them exams that they flunk at a state level in many states. And could you please give us a little bit of explanation what that's about and how relevant it is?
Well, you know, there's always been the critics that charged that we pay too little attention to teachers that did not know subject matter. And a lot of critics say that, you know, subject matter competency is all that you need in order to be a teacher. And if you know your subject matter, nothing else really matters, that you can just walk in and do it. I don't agree with that. I think that not only do you need the subject matter, but you also need to have the knowledge that is specifically aimed towards a profession of teaching. That means, how do you teach? How do you design curriculum? Do you know about adolescent development? Do you know how learning takes place? Do you know how to manage a classroom? These are other things that teachers must learn in terms of being effective. So I know there was a criticism of teachers in Massachusetts because somebody gave them some type of a test, and some of the teachers didn't pass it, and so therefore the superintendent of schools for the state of Massachusetts got all upset and was going to do all kinds of things. If you would have looked at the test that was taken, the test was about as reliable as something that would be made up by a five-year-old.
Well, they don't tell you that part in the media.
No, they do not. And it was interesting if you would look at the test, and I did get a hold of one of the tests and went through it. It was so ambiguous, broad in nature, that any one of the answers, it was one of the multiple choice types of things, any one of the answers were correct or not correct. I mean, it was a really interesting and...
Depending on your perception.
Pardon?
Depending on your perception.
Depending on your perception, and obviously... This was supposedly a pedagogical test that was made out by a group of individuals that were primarily discipline specialists. In other words, they were looking at what people knew about the discipline and trying to tie it into how people teach, and they didn't know how people taught, so therefore it was really very ambiguous. So you haven't heard much about that since, I know, and the reason why is once they really figured out what the test was all about, they began to say, well, that really wasn't a way by which you judge teachers.
Yeah, well, they said it, but it, perhaps in the school district, but it certainly didn't come across the media because I haven't seen anything.
You haven't seen anything more about it?
No.
No, and you won't, because basically the test was totally unreliable and invalid.
Well, so what they, but unfortunately, and this is happens over and over and over again, the media leaves us with this perception of incompetent teachers rather than talking about the follow-up in terms of what the test was all about and what the teachers are all about. So, you know, and I really have an adversarial ideology about the press and how they relate matters of education to the public, which
is... Well, I think the press basically, you know, Gary, I guess one of the things that you must take into consideration, and I have to continually go back to that, is that everybody in the United States knows how to teach because they've had 12 years... of observations on how to teach. And so there is a plethora of misunderstanding as to what is good teaching, what is bad teaching. Everybody has their own viewpoint as to those types of things. So with so many opinions out, even those people that are a part of the press corps have their own opinions. So it is one of the areas where everybody knows a little bit about it. And that's something where most other areas you don't, you know, there are certain areas you don't know anything about. We all don't know anything about. I don't know how to fix a car. I raise the hood, and if I can't see something immediately, then I call AAA. But everybody knows something about teaching. Everybody has their own opinions on how kids should be taught. Most people are parents. A lot of people are parents, so therefore they even have more convictions with reference to that. So it is something which everybody knows something about, and I think that even more so allows for a lot of criticism and misunderstanding.
Well, I appreciate all of your comments. We are about to go on break, and we'll revisit this in our second half hour. You are listening to WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. This is Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We are here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. Today we're visiting with Dr. Bob Bartos, Dean of College of Education and Human Services at Shippensburg University and Graduate Dean at Shippensburg University. We're talking about the teachers in the state of Pennsylvania and the nation and the status of teachers and teacher training programs. We are about to break to listen to our sponsors. And we'd like to thank you for joining us each week. Our sponsors for our programming are CK Auto, with stores located in Moosic, Scranton, Kingston, and Pittston, offering all kinds of car supplies for your needs, as well as Earthheart Foundation, which is located in Charlottesville, Virginia, offering services for families, children, and educators. The number at Earthheart Foundation, where you can receive information about any of our broadcasts, is 1-877-PRO-KIDS. That's 1-877-PROKIDS. Or you can reach them on their website at www.rlc.net/prokids. That's www.rlc.net/prokids, or email us at prokids@rlc.net. We'll return in a moment. We're back with Children Come First and Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here today with Dr. Bob Bartos, Dean of the College of Education and Human Services at Shippensburg University. And Bob, before the break, we were talking about teachers and teacher training. You said that 2.5 million new teachers are needed in the United States, but I never quite got how many teachers we're training.
Well, we're not really going to be training 2.5 million. That's one of the more difficult things that we're finding. One thing for sure, the type of training which teachers are getting now, is training that applies not only to the teaching profession, but also to business and to other types of professions. When we train a teacher, we are training a teacher to be able to plan, to execute that plan in a meaningful way, and to assess it or to evaluate it in meaningful ways. We're asking a teacher to be able to interact with individuals, both young and adult, and we're asking them to represent the profession in meaningful ways. And there's not a business in the United States that would not like to have that type of individual as well for their own purposes. So the act of teaching, or the art of teaching, or the training that goes into all this is also something that is very appealing to other types of professions as well. A lot of our teachers are not going into the profession once they get out, but they are going into other businesses or other types of work-related areas, primarily because the pay is better, and there's more recognition, and there's less criticism. So I'm not sure we're going to be able to train 2.5 million people in the next 10 years to replace all of those that will be retiring or moving out of the profession.
What are we going to do?
Well, I don't really know. You know, that's something that I'm very worried about as a person that's training teachers. I want to produce the best possible person that I can, because I truthfully believe that, you know, all the evidence out there says that the teacher makes a difference, a very huge difference in the academic achievement of the kids. I mean, all the databases that you look at, that I've looked at over the last 20 years, is a very clear and convincing. It's very clear and convincing evidence that the single most powerful factor in kids' learning and achievement gain is in the quality of the teacher. So by the very nature of that, we have to produce very highly qualified teachers. In producing very highly qualified teachers, they also are qualified to do many other things, which in which they can probably make more money and have more impact in the long run. So it's a real dilemma. And we are not going to have a surplus of teachers in the United States, and even in 5 years, we are going to be in a very difficult situation, I think, even in 5 years, as more and more teachers retire and less teachers come into the profession. And all of the criticisms of the public schools and the scare tactics that are in the press, to some extent, exacerbate that whole situation of getting more people into schools.
Right. Who would want to go and teach when they're under the scrutiny of the public?
That is correct.
When they can be a computer programmer for six figures.
That is exactly correct. Or they can work in a company in any number of other activities with that training and do very well for themselves, and feel like they've accomplished something and not having to justify their very existence as a teacher in a public school. It's a very difficult job being a teacher, and the critics don't realize that, and it becomes more difficult each year because of the cost of education to begin with, the fact that teachers are asked to do so many more things than they once were asked to do. They have to be counselors, they have to be teachers, they have to be surrogate parents to some extent, they have to be social workers, they have to be disciplinarians and police officers and that whole process during the day. And sometimes it's just too much. I just feel very good about the teachers in the schools today, for the most part, are extremely dedicated, or they wouldn't be there.
Well, you have certainly said an awful lot about how people's perception, I mean, our perception of teachers, and I've heard about it as I travel around the state, everyone is concerned about the pay they receive, and they're not really looking at the whole picture of the life of a teacher. And in fact, I was a teacher many years ago, and I was in Philadelphia, and it was just, I respect and admire those people so much, because it was every day it was something new. I can remember in a first grade classroom a child coming in a very disruptive behavior, and that morning his mother had stabbed his father, and they were, one was in the hospital and the other one was in prison. So
and people say, well, that doesn't happen very often,
right?
But it happens every day. And it not only happens in very urban schools, but it happens in suburban and rural schools as well.
As we have seen.
It's not indigenous to one place. And I think that as we graduate teachers from here and they go out and they serve 2 or 3 years in the core, so to speak, they see that as well. Talk to any of them and they'll tell you of some really crazy situations that they had never once thought would happen in that particular school.
Bob, how can we change people's perception in order to create more? What can we do to change the perception of the public and or the teaching profession to draw new teachers into the profession? What do you see?
Well, I hate to bring up that word money, but certainly given today's economy and given the importance of a teacher working with 25 or 30 kids in an elementary school or 150 kids in a secondary school, given the importance of what that individual does, they really do need to be paid accordingly.
I agree
That's
with you completely.
First thing. I think it would draw more people into it. Right now, we need more males in the elementary areas. We need more males in teaching altogether. They're not coming into it in nearly the numbers that they should. The single-parent families today, primarily, it looks more, you know, there's about 80% single-parent families that are only mothers. That's the single parent. So many of these kids need male role models in the schools. We're not getting the males. There needs to be a lot of remediation of kids coming in. There's not the money for it. The special education area has taken a lot of money out of some other areas and are trying to do things there. It's just a plethora of things, but it really does come down to, first of all, somebody in the community that is well-respected has to come forward and says that they support public education and they need to get other parents and other members of the community behind their own school. It starts at grassroots. It's not something that a governor can do and certainly not a secretary of education. It's something that has to start in your own community. And I believe that people have to support. I think parents need to support the schools. I think they need to know their teachers. I think teachers need to know them. I think there needs to be some support services for everybody collectively. There needs to be much better communication between the school and other social agencies in the community. There just has to be more communication at the grassroots level. That's what's going to change it overall. Not governmental action, not one person, but people in each community. That's where it's got to begin.
Do you feel that perception is a great deal, attitudes and beliefs is a great deal, a part of the problem, and that we need to change our mindset rather than...
I think we do need to change our mindset about what's important. I believe that because, and obviously the culture has changed in the United States, and both parents are working in order to do the things that they need to do to support themselves and to support their kids. I think that the perception, there's been a weakening of the perception of rigor when it comes to public schools and more of a perception of some place for a kid to be. And I don't think that we are looking at it in the right way. I think parents need to demand good quality education, but they need to understand what the teacher has to go through, and they need to understand that there's going to be dialogue with the teachers in order for each to understand what the other one wants.
That dialogue is critical, but how do we get parents in to talk about these issues when they're, as you said, either single parents or busy with careers and don't seem to have, there doesn't seem to be enough time for, people don't make the time for communication anymore.
Well, it's interesting. There are some schools that are saying, you will come in at certain times, or either your kid will be set in another setting. There are ways, primarily, I think most parents, for the most part, do want that to happen, but it's last on their agenda. They need to worry about their work. They need to worry about their car payments. They need to worry about all these other types of things. And yes, those are important, but more important than anything else is their kids. And that mindset's got to change. And I don't know. I'm not a psychologist to the point where I can tell you exactly how to brainwash or whatever you would do. But something's got to change. And I do believe that the media has something to do with the mindset that's taking place, and I believe that the politicians, for the most part, have reinforced that media concept.
Well, getting away from the media and talk and trying to do positive things, which is what we do here, what are some of the innovations you're doing, the kinds of innovation activities that you're doing for prospective teachers at Shippensburg? What are they being exposed to? And believe me, I'm taking this because I know you and I know Shippensburg University. I want to backtrack a little bit because the state of Pennsylvania is used to, for the last 3 years, every year the focus of education has been different outcomes. Now, then it's standards, and who knows what it's going to be next year. So you kind of lack trust in the Secretary of Education for every year that there's a different focus. I mean, I know if I change my business every year, and one year I'd be selling insurance, and the next year I'd be growing farm produce, I don't know how many, and the following year I'd be selling something else, I don't know how many people would take me seriously or even, you know, go along with my business if I kept changing every year. And that's, I think there's a huge mistrust in the state of Pennsylvania. So I'm saying this with a grain of salt because I know that Shippensburg University, and you in particular, Dr. Bartos, with Peggy Hawkersmith, Dr. Peggy Hawkersmith, are very much in tune with the latest research, and you don't jump to conclusions like many other places in the hierarchy. So what kinds of innovative activities are happening for prospective teachers in the state?
Well, I think you brought up a very good point. Let me just say one thing about that, and we'll talk about some of the things we're doing. You know, you mentioned the idea that we don't jump from one thing to the other, and I don't think good teacher education programs ever do that. I really believe that strong educational programs, teacher education programs, tend to share several characteristics that are truly common throughout. I think they have a common vision of what good teaching actually is. They do have a very well-defined standard of what they want to see performed. The students always have a very good, solid liberal arts core curriculum type of thing where they have a lot of different courses in a lot of different areas so they can broaden themselves. And they do have a good understanding of how to teach the pedagogical skills, and they are assessed on a regular basis. Those are things, those are visions that are basically standard that I think if you have them, you're going to have a good teacher education program. So, given that as a premise to what we're doing here, we are making sure that our students from the very first course they take in teacher education practice what we preach. And that means that in every course that they have, they are out in some school, whether it's our lab school or one of the schools in the area, observing and working with kids. To me, there's no other way of really learning how to do something other than doing it with supervision. And that's what we do. Our kids have opportunities to work with all grade levels, whether they're elementary, to be an elementary teacher, a secondary teacher. They work at all grade levels. They do tutoring. They do reading. They do observations. They do case studies. Each class has a separate set of responsibilities for them to do.
Excuse me, what year do they start going out and working?
The freshman year. So they're out all 4 years that they're here. I tell them, many of the elementary people coming in, they say, I asked them why they want to be elementary teachers. They said because they love kids. They just love little kids. And I tell them they may learn to hate little kids before they ever get to the fourth year, because we're going to give them approximately 700 hours out in field prior to their last year to make sure that that's what they really want to do.
I want to get back to this in a second. You're listening to Children Come First, WAAT, 750 AM, with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. Today we're visiting with Dr. Bob Bartos, Dean of the College of Education and Human Services at Shippensburg University. Bob, when I received my education degree, I did not get into the classroom till my junior year.
I didn't get into the classroom till my senior year.
And in many professions, that's the medical profession, many other professions, that's true. By the time it was my junior year, I had had enough philosophical, theological premise and ideas, and when I got to the classroom, I realized this was not the place I really wanted to be. And I think it's extraordinary that you're doing this at the freshman level, so it gives teachers the opportunity before they get to the junior year, their senior year, to get some exposure.
Yeah, they have to have that exposure, because the content is built on exposure. You can't just give kids all the theories and not allow them to apply those theories and to see if they work for them. And so it becomes imperative that they get out as early as possible and as much as possible. That's why our lab school is so important to us, because they get an opportunity to work with young kids in the lab school. That's why the school districts around here have been very, very good in allowing us to bring classes in for a week or 2 weeks at a time in order for them to get an understanding of the culture of the school, the discipline, the variety of kids, the special needs, the relationships, the culture of the classroom and the school collectively. Those are all extremely important things that we talk about theoretically in class, but they have to really experience it some way or the other. So we do that. That's one of the things that we do that I think is extremely important. Secondly, and I think just as important, since we are a College of Human Services, it's important for all human service people, whether they're social workers or working in the juvenile court system or teachers or counselors or whatever, they need to understand about the other agencies that do interact with the school. The child and welfare agencies, the probation, the juvenile court system. It's important for teachers to understand that the school is not an isolated thing, and that it does exist with other agencies, and other agencies work in that school in various ways. We even take social workers, prospective social workers, people who are going to be in probation or juvenile work, and teachers, and place them in the same school district and have them work off of each other as far as the teacher teaching the class, the social worker working with the parents, and the juvenile kid working with kids that are in trouble in that particular school, so that there is an opportunity for that interaction to take place. Because a teacher may be a social worker from time to time, and a social worker might be a teacher from time to time. So it's important for them to understand how each other works. So we do that, and we've done that for the last couple of years, and it's worked out very well.
That's an excellent, excellent opportunity, and I know that I've been with other schools in the state and in the nation, and most, even principals, have difficulty with that relationship and within the community, and I think that's outstanding. Listen, you talked a little bit about high school teachers and elementary teachers a little bit earlier.
Uh-huh.
I noticed that there is a huge difference in the mindset of elementary teachers and high school teachers. Elementary teachers seem to, I don't know if it's the way the curriculum is set up or whatever it is, but elementary teachers seem to be more open and have more teamwork than high school teachers, who seem to be more turf-oriented and this is my subject, my room, etc. Where does that come from?
Oh, I think it comes from the fact that for many years, and it's still to some extent even today, elementary teachers have always been trained to be self-contained classrooms. And so in a self-contained classroom, you have to know a little bit about English, a little bit about reading, a little bit about writing, certainly about math and science and all the rest. And so therefore, they have to plan so that they can move from one area to the other, and the transition are smooth, and they have to have different groups working on different things at different times. And so the very nature of teaching in an elementary school, especially a self-contained school, is the idea of collaboration, is the idea of flexibility. You have to have not only the patience of Job, but the flexibility to be able to allow a lot of things to be happening at the same time and learning taking place. As we train secondary people, the most important thing to them, and rightly so to some extent, is their content. That's what they went to school, first of all, for, was the content. Secondly, they went to school also to perhaps teach that content. But first of all is the content. So when they do get into the public schools, as far as teaching in the secondary level, the content becomes very important, and they treasure that, they cherish that, they protect that. And there's no, I understand that to some extent. I think today's people that are being trained in secondary do have a better background in pedagogical skills. They do collaborate much more readily, and they are using some of the more cooperative types of learning processes than they did before. But there's a distinct difference, and I don't think that difference is going to change that much in the next few years, because content is extremely important to secondary people, because that's what they were trained to learn. They were trained to learn the content and then also trained to teach that content.
Well, I have a question to ask you, because we know today, and it's the research and the brain research, and not only that, but if we just look at technology and we look at the computer, we know that integrating subject matter is imperative for our students. The information is just coming too quickly, and we cannot consistently separate subject matter. We must teach children as wholes.
That is correct.
And we must integrate the curriculum. And how are we going to do that when we have a mindset of, this turf issue?
Well, I think it's got... I'm not sure I have the answer to that, Darren. I really don't know for sure. I think that as more teachers are trained in the secondary area, as there is more demand for that integration, I do think that it will occur, but it's not going to occur overnight. I think as more and more information is made available, and with the internet and with all the other databases that are now, students are going to be able to get all the information they need, and teachers are going to finally have to say, how can I begin to integrate all this information into something that's meaningful? Only then are they going to be able to do what you're asking in terms of integration. Up until the point where they have to get to the point where they are so overwhelmed by the content that they have to do something else. And I think right now they're still not overwhelmed by the content.
And it's happening. It's going to happen more and more. I mean,
it is. It is. I agree with you. The technology is such that 5 years from now they should be overwhelmed by it.
Exactly. Well, I was wondering how are we better training our teachers then in terms to answer this call for technology in the information age we're in?
Well, I think most of the teacher education programs now are forcing our students to integrate software, integrate technology into almost every one of the courses which they take. Our students have to take 2 courses in computers. And then they also, in every one of the courses which they take in terms of pedagogy, in terms of training how to teach and how to develop curriculum, they're forced to infuse software into those curriculums and to use it in meaningful ways. So the superintendents are demanding that because they have computers that need to be used. And the kids are demanding it. The kids are sharper than we are today with reference to the computers. So if they're there, they're going to use them. So we might as well make them use them in meaningful ways. And so we're training teachers now, I think, much more so in technology than we even were 3 to 5 years ago.
Well, you seem to be going in the right direction with regard to integrating, the human services.
Right.
What can we do to, we've got to change our mindset here. We've spent 100 years teaching everybody the separate core curriculum. What kinds of directions, what do? Do we start getting teachers to work together in high schools?
I believe that what you're going to have to do is to, first of all, eliminate the grades as such. I like the idea of the non-graded system in the elementary school. And so you're working as a group, you're working with a knowledge base, and you're working collectively to have that student learn that knowledge base. And once they've learned and looked at the integration of that one particular knowledge base, you move to the next. So the teachers have to work as teams or to work together to get those kids at that particular point. I personally like the middle school model in which teachers work as teams in terms of integrating the curriculum. They integrate the writing with the literature, with the history, and to some extent the science and math is integrated. And I think that same model can be applied to the high school area in meaningful fashions, especially with the advent of all the technology which we have today. So I personally like to see that middle school model simply move to the high school.
There's much concern and talk about parents being involved in the curriculum, in the school, because parent participation is important.
Uh-huh.
And yet what I see as I go around the country is that teachers are not trained to help those parents be in the classroom. What are you doing at Shippensburg to help teachers become a part of the classroom?
You mean as parents become part of the classroom, you say?
Yes, bringing in parents in the classroom.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. We haven't done a whole lot in that area. We basically, the real key, I think, is making sure that parents are aware of what we're doing. That means that there's got to be a lot of communication between teacher and parent. Not so much in parents coming in as much as teachers making sure through communications, whether it be notes or letters or updates or things of that sort, as to what they're doing in their classrooms. And also to ask if any of the parents in each of these updates, and we encourage our kids to do that once they get out, to keep in touch with the parents in terms of updates as to what's happening in their classrooms. And then ask the parents if they would like to come in and be to do something surrounding that particular set of materials that they're dealing with. I think it's the only way you can do it. And parents have to volunteer.
Well, I think you're correct. I think the communication issue, the PR issue, and the marketing of our schools are really critical for the next century. Would you like to say anything in summation? We have about a minute to go.
Well, only the fact that I do think that much of what we do in teacher education today, I think, is good. Like any industry, we do produce some that just don't make it, and those are screened out as quickly as possible. But the large majority of people coming out of teacher education institutions today are committed to it, are willing to do what is necessary to help kids to learn. And if the public would only understand that, and would cherish them as they do other segments of the population, I think education would be much better served in this state or in any community that we live in.
Thank you, Dr. Bob Bartos from Shippensburg University, for joining us today. You have been listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m., We're here talking about issues relating to children, and we'd like to thank CK Auto and Earthheart Foundation as our sponsors. Join us again next week for Children Come First. Take care of your children. Have a wonderful day and evening.